You're listening to the Thank God for Nostra podcast.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Thank God for Nostra podcast. I am John, also known as Pottlebot. I work on the Coracle.social Nostra clients. And today I have with me Neil. Neil, why don't you say your name? Because I'm not sure if I can pronounce it properly.
Yeah, right. My name is Neil Leesmans. It's my last name.
Yeah, I would have gotten
to pronounce.
Leesmans. All right. Cool. Well, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for coming on. Neil is a prolific Nostr designer. I've seen a number of mock-ups of his, and he's been around for a while and is focusing on groups right now, which is obviously a hobby horse of mine. So I'm excited to finally talk to him, if not face-to-face, then voice-to-voice, and learn a little bit. Neil, could you give a little bit of an introduction to yourself, your background, how you got into Nostr? If you have a Bitcoin story, share that too, just whatever the audience might want to know about you.
Okay. I'll try not to go back too much. I come from the industrial design side. That's what I studied. I tried to be an entrepreneur in that, got really frustrated with the whole space and all of the, I got into circular economies and all of the hypes and climate stuff and all of that things, and got really frustrated with that and with city life, and then decided to go and find a wife and start a farm. So that's what I did. And so I've been a farmer for a few years, applying everything I learned in design to build new kinds of chicken coops and all of that kind of stuff instead, and plan out how a farm should look like and how to monetize it from day one and how to not get into deals with the government by getting subsidies and all of that kind of stuff.
Living the dream. Holy cow. Forget Nostr. Let's talk about that.
No, but that's awesome. I'm mentioning it because from that perspective, I can see the early days of Nostr in a bit of different light, I think, than most of the people coming from SaaS companies or things like this. So I come a bit from the designer, very much into innovation and how to see new things and how to design for them, for the user. Then going into farming and actually monetizing a farm from day one, paying it back in under 2 years, and now having that farm without debt, living on it. And at a point when we were at that point, I was listening to farm podcasts, and they get then blend into the carnivore, whatever health stories. And it's on one of those podcasts that then there was a blend with, I guess it was Robert Breedlove or Seyfedin or something like this, mentioning Bitcoin. And for me, as a autonomy focused farmer, that clicked instantly, because I saw it as a way to be autonomous. And I, like, again, it's a bit different because I got to skip the whole shitcoin thing, because I already was scared away by that. That's the whole reason I went away from city life and went into being alone on a field somewhere and starting something entrepreneurial. So that's what we did. And at the time that I discovered Bitcoin, we also just had our first son, and we had also some money that we were first gonna put into buffaloes, because that was the next step after the several activities that we planned step by step. That was the next step, but then we decided instead of buffaloes, it's gonna be Bitcoin, and we're gonna take it easy with the first kid that we have, and take that opportunity basically. And then I started learning coding a bit more, started learning SvelteKit and things like this, making websites for people. And that way, since I'm Belgian and my wife is French and our farm is in France, after the whole COVID situation, we wanted to spread our life a bit more between those two countries with the kids, so the grandparents can see them, la la la. Anyway, long story short, so I started to work more on my computer, listening even more to podcasts, and that's how I heard, I think it was Pablo on Some Guys Once podcast, raving about Highlighter, and yeah, that's what got me into Noster. Not really the Twitter use case or something like this, but the persistent knowledge base that can always be referred to. And yeah, since I'm not bad at designing stuff, I started sending people stuff, some kind of proposals of logos or user interfaces or whatever. Yeah, ways of seeing things, and people started liking it. And so now for over a year, I've been doing that as 80% of my time next to the farming and family stuff I also do. So I hope that was not too long, but that's a bit.
That was awesome. I didn't know a lot about about you. I have so many questions. First of all, could you kind of outline how industrial design is different from web or application, like software application design?
First of all, I didn't study software application design, but the main difference is that it's physical, and that comes with a bit more complexity in terms of the materials you choose, the processes it has to go through to actually be shippable or usable. Then there's the whole ergonomics issue, where you have way more than just a screen to interact with. You have all of the ways that you can possibly use something in an unintended way. And that's what we did a lot of testing around. Like, you can dream up the perfect product to do X use case, but then you put it in someone's hands and they will do like whatever we did. Like, you cannot even imagine. The things you also see when you like record people behind an iPhone screen trying an Oster app, of course, but like, there's just, an order of magnitude more angles on it because you're in 3D space interacting with a product that not only has software on it, but also the hardware side.
The classic example being door handles, right? You know, you can make a door handle that looks like a push, but it's actually on a pull, and you just like completely mess up everyone's life from that point on. Or do you have any other good examples of a situation like that?
Not at the top of my mind. Like me, I ended up designing a lot for people with some kind of handicap. There it was especially important because you cannot at all foresee what someone will really do with, like, to eat. I designed things for people that cannot really hold spoons and things like this, so to make them eat autonomously. You cannot project because you cannot test it yourself. So all of this, you just have to do face to face, literally. I was mostly in that space. And
yeah, keep going.
No, yeah, then it's like they have to push handles with their chins and things like this, and then they will start eating the handle, and like, you know, like, it's all of this like funny stories that you can then have, which we can spend hours on, but I guess we don't really have to hear. I also designed a chair for children that have cerebral palsy, so they cannot really sit properly. They have spastic movements. Also, they're completely unforeseeable what they will do with a chair, where you have to put the support points. I designed it in a way so they don't have to buy a new one every year, and so they can be completely adaptive. And so, I was into things like that. So that's a bit.
That's awesome. That's a world that I've only heard about. That is really interesting. I mean, I've read the design of everyday things like every other programmer out there, but that's about the extent of my familiarity with industrial design. So how did that apply to the farming side of things? I'm really interested in that. Like, permaculture has always been something that I've been interested in. I think I would like to see more of it. I'm an awful gardener myself, but sustainable farming seems like something that everyone should be able to get behind, regardless of you know, your politics or whatever. It's beautiful. And it embodies a lot of principles about reality that, you know, you can kind of see actually happening in real life, just stewardship and care and all that kind of thing. So, I mean, you know, it's always something that I wish I could do is just get into permaculture. It's awesome that you actually made that move. So, so yeah, how did your industrial design background factor into that?
Yeah, I got pulled in by the permaculture crew, I guess, also, and started reading those books. And since they talked a bit more in design language than farmer language, that was really attractive to me. And I guess my background allowed me to cut through a lot of the fluff also, because people will read these kind of permaculture books or scroll on the internet and find things, and they will find specific technicalities and then apply them to their context without really applying them to their context, because they just do copy paste. Like, they will do some kind of fancy herb spiral with rosemary and thyme and things like this, and they will just put it in front of their house, and different context will not work there. And then they will go and brag to all of their friends that they're doing permaculture and things like this. And so these kind of patterns, I think I could really, quickly cut through to really see, okay, these are the patterns. How can I now apply them to my context? And then, for me, that was an addictive phase, because I could really, once we had the land here in France, which of course bureaucracy took forever, but once you have your own land, you have this canvas to start doing all of these things and to start mapping them out. And to apply actual design to farming, which was really, really, really fun, because it's a bit permissionless in a way also. You get the fast feedback that I got with the people with a handicap also, but now you get it from nature. That was really fun for me, because it's a combination of quickly being able to ship or to sell products, and having half of the day also to design fancy chicken coops or greenhouses or even our own house that we have here now. We custom designed and built, and so really satisfying diversity in the days, and combining the design world that I used to live in with now also actually selling stuff and being an entrepreneur.
What's an example of a project that you've put together on the farm that you're really proud of?
I think my chicken coop design, because I managed to design something that was in my mind the first in the world, as far as I know of. I designed a lightweight chicken coop for 60 to 80 chickens that you can move by hand relatively easily, where you have clean eggs, where the poop falls on the pasture, and where they can have their hierarchy, because they have their pecking order, and so it's like in a triangle shape, it's all the perfect distance from each other, la la la. So I went a bit crazy on that, and I was proud of that, because I could also scale it. Like, once I have one coop like this, it works, it's paid back in 1 month and a half time. Bam, I can get a new one, And when we then decided to stop the farming activities with our kid and going into Bitcoin and Noster, I could just do that, because it's all modular and there's no sunk cost really, besides the lightweight materials that went into building it. I'm proud of those things. Same with our greenhouse. I managed to design, me and my wife, we managed to set up a greenhouse that was also relatively small, but above the vegetable beds, we had our seeding tables, so that if we watered them, we automatically watered the beds under it. The seeding tables were all of the same size, all modular, so we could take them out and put them outside on tables and all of the system was designed in a way that it was not fixed and that it was, in permaculture language, always stacking functions.
That's awesome. It sounds like you took the time to actually understand the problems instead of just sort of impose a crazy design on things. That's the error that I always make. I'm not a designer. So, you know, what I have learned about design is that it requires a lot of research and a lot of listening and a lot of really molding yourself to the actual problem before going ahead and building something. But being biased towards building, I often fail to take that step of actually understanding the problem. And then, you know, I build something and then it doesn't really fit because my theories weren't aligned with reality, you know, and my gardening stuff has had the same problem. I built a hoop house a long time ago, but I absolutely didn't need to. I just wanted to build a hoop house. And then I grew a bunch of beets in it, but it didn't make any sense. It was completely pointless, $100 that I spent on the materials. And I didn't do the weed control properly. And, you know, part of it was a certain amount of ignorance on my part, but part of it was just a failure to actually address myself to the problem I was trying to solve, or even articulate which problem I was trying to solve. Would you agree that that's like a big part of design, or would you disagree? Would you qualify that at all?
No, I think I agree, but I think it's also fine to just try things as long as you start small. And I also don't want to speak in generalities. Like, that's just the way I like to do things. And that's also the whole, yeah, that's how I like to do things. Like, start small, get fast feedback. Ideally in physical space, like physical design space, like on a farm, I like things to be modular, and scalable really fast, both up and down. So yeah, if you make a hoop house and you grow some beets in it and it's a small hoop house, you get pretty fast feedback of what things were not a good idea. And you can adapt, and maybe the hoop house is better to have chickens in it and it worked really good. And then you can scale that up because you know exactly how much one hoop house costs, and you go from there.
Yeah, that's fair. I learned a lot from the hoop house. I learned that I don't know anything about gardening, which is actually, it has good applications down the road. So yeah, cool. So, well, we're not here to talk about farming, unfortunately, as interesting as that topic is. We are here to talk about Nostr and specifically communities. So I've seen a little bit of work that you've been doing, you know, I'll just kind of say what I've been, what my journey with Nostr communities has been, and we can just kind of talk about that. You know, for a long time, well, originally I was working on a protocol that was separate from Nostr, and it was really similar to Nostr, where you had a multiple relay sort of architecture, but it was based on Scuttlebutt pubs. And I had this concept of relay reputation. So if enough people from a given relay are in your network, then you'll start automatically pulling stuff from that relay. So relays and communities were sort of the same thing. And the community could build up a certain amount of reputation based on your web of trust, without being something that you directly interact with, until you're ready to start gossiping content over to your home relays or to your client or something like that. Obviously, I put that aside because it was complicated and no one else was working on it, and moved over to Nostr. And since then, my goal has been to create something for basically my church community. I started with the Twitter model because Twitter is really simple, but that was never really the ultimate goal. My goal was to replace, to basically get my church community off of Facebook, because Facebook is extremely sticky. I deleted my Facebook in 2017 and immediately got uninvited to basically all the events that people were planning because I didn't have a Facebook AM anymore. I put a lot of work into that this last year and spring, this last winter mostly, I guess, trying to build Coracle into something that could displace Facebook in terms of having events and marketplaces, as well as feeds and posts. But in the process, I talked to a community organizer who runs a Slack instance for the community. And it's kind of occurred to me since then that I think Facebook is not actually what people want. It's just what people have. And so they are, it's very sticky because of the network that's on there. But enough people have actually left Facebook at this point that you can't really plan events on Facebook anymore because the people you want to invite aren't there anymore. It's not just me missing out. It's like 10%, 20% of the people you actually want to invite who are missing your invitation. And so, you know, chat products have gotten a lot more popular in the last several years, both, you know, all along the spectrum from small chats all the way up to really big things like Telegram groups. And so I think like groups are the way to do it. And chat is probably a better metaphor for the day-to-day interaction within a digital community than notes. Because notes are not very like context dependent, and kind of like the Facebook metaphor. Because like a lot of the people I know who still use Facebook actually install web browser plugins to hide the main feed.
Yeah.
And you know, Messenger is like a bigger part of it nowadays. So anyway, I've been reevaluating my choices this last 3 or 4 months or so, and I'm looking in different directions. But yeah, like, what are your thoughts on that? Like, where are we at in terms of like Facebook actually scratching the itch versus different kinds of metaphors and mediums?
I think I mostly agree with what you're saying, in the sense that Facebook has something to offer and chats have something to offer. And me, I think Nostr can, and maybe only Nostr can offer the best of both of those worlds. Because people want the events. Some communities want the forum-like posts. I think almost any community needs a place to say good morning and to have a day-to-day fast kind of chat interaction, and a really low barrier replying with an emoji kind of things. And I think then quite a lot of communities need a certain subset of content types. On Nostr, those are events types. Some will regularly organize events, and then now even in chats you still have the problem that then, hooray, you're in the Telegram group of something, and then they will constantly link out to their desired content types, whether it's calendar events, whether it's Substack articles, whether it's, I don't know, it can even be a community excited about open source apps, and then they will link out to the apps all the time. And I think on Nostr, we can have this great combination of all of these content types tailored to specific communities. And that's what really excites me. And I do agree that chats are, in my eyes, very obviously the main way people organize and form communities now. And they will use Facebook either because of legacy or because of the desired content type that matches with their goal. So if they do want to include forum-like posts or do want to include calendar events, then Facebook is a nice go-to. Like for my wife, for example, for all of the homeschooling and meeting up with other moms, Facebook is still a great match because you have both the Messenger chat, the forum posts, and the calendar events that you can plan and things like that. So I don't just know where you want to touch on there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have so many thoughts. But yeah, like Facebook has, I talk about Nostr's possible success in terms of network effect of network effects, right? So like network effect is just how many users there are squared, and that's the value of the network. But really with an open protocol, you get number of users squared times number of applications. So the network effect has the potential to grow much more quickly. And those are those content types you're talking about. And having those native to Nostr is an idea I've kind of struggled with because, like, in one sense, yeah, we have all those content types and they can be rich and embedded in the client. But at the same time, the internet kind of already has those things. And clients can only do so much to really have a rich experience for a wide variety of content types. So like, how much better is embedding a calendar event in a note in a chat room than having a link to, you know, an open calendar standard potentially, which doesn't, some versions of that exist, but none of them are very good. Like I think Nostr can really improve on open source calendars.
Yes.
But like, how much better in your mind is Nostr entities than just regular hyperlinks?
Yeah, I get the issue that you mentioned completely, because that's when my mind goes there all the time. And I think the cool part is that you don't have to actually be good in displaying the actual content type. It can be like, let's say I'm in the design community and we make like Figma-like files and that's the content type, or we build like 3D models. Obviously, the chatting and zapping app, as I start calling them, will not be good at displaying the 3D model or letting you interact with it at all. Like, that's not the space for that. But any content type on Nostr does have automatically a reply section. You can zap it, you can bookmark it, you can share it. So even if your chatting and zapping app, which in my mind will probably be your daily driver, doesn't display that that content type properly, it can still display some kind of preview of it or whatever, or even just like the name of it. But you can still have the conversation within that app, because that app doesn't, like, you don't want to have the super app and have all of these centralizing forces. But if the conversation part and the zapping part and the bookmarking part and the sharing part is all the same anyway, no matter what the content type is, then you can have apps that do that part really well, that really nail the way people want to have conversations, and nail the value for value part and the being able to respond to zaps and all of that fun stuff that so far we don't have yet. So me, I'm very hopeful for clients that do that part really well. And I see a world where users will basically choose one or two of these apps because they really like how they do a quick custom emoji reaction, or how they display zaps, or that they don't display zaps at all. Like, whatever. I see people getting really excited about a certain way of navigating the conversational space and the zap space and the basically, yeah, mostly conversational space and interactional space with the content type, but not the actual, especially for the more complex content types, I don't see that happen within the same app. So even for a calendar event, it could just like show a quick preview with the date or whatever. You cannot edit the calendar event in the app. You cannot, like, you just click it and it links out to whatever micro app you like, or the community likes for that purpose. But the whole conversation underneath it in the reply section is there for you within that app with the tools that you like and are accustomed to. And that way, for at least that part, you don't have to learn or be like begrudgingly using another type of interface in that other app just to make a comment on a Figma file or something like this, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And the example of the 3D model is really helpful, because that's not like a text interface that fits into a box. That's a really like rich experience. You could even have, you know, like a full game or like a movie or I don't know, some sort of rich content thing that would be complex for a client to display.
A cyberspace chart.
Yeah, sure. Like, on a Sunday. So I think I disagree with what you're saying, but it sparked some new thoughts. So let me see if I can explain this. So, you know, what you're saying is like these rich content types, they don't have to be embedded completely in clients. They can be embedded in a really lightweight way and then linked out to with the proper client, you know, using NIP 89 handlers. And that's all good. And if that were all you could do with the rich content types, then I don't see much of a benefit over having links. Because like if you had a link, then you could go to the other app and have the rich experience. And assuming that that app is using an open protocol, then you can use other apps to access the same experience that's oriented around the content. The benefit is that you get to choose your handler, which is actually really big, because I think maybe the key here to that permeability is that with a link, all you get is a link. And you might get a link preview, right? You can pull an image, you can pull some text, and then show the little box that is a link. But that's all you can do. Whereas if you have a 3D STL or something like that that is being embedded, the client developer has the option to just show a link or to incrementally improve the depth of rendering. So they could like render the image, render the shape and show a still image, or they could show like a fully interactive 3D view or whatever they might want to do, or even like pull those events in. Maybe your client is actually a 3D world and it pulls those things in, and the 3D shapes have a deeper experience than like the 2D stuff or the informational stuff. But that depth of possible integration means that you can have a more close integration and more unified user experience, even if the user ultimately links out to that other client that's focused. And another like insane idea that occurs to me is, what if you had clients that allowed the user to substitute their own rendering logic, right? Maybe using some kind of micro app or using like a web extension. So, you know, you go to Coracle, you load up your 3D image into a note, and Coracle says, I don't know how to use this. Here's some apps that you can use to view this 3D shape. But then your browser extension, Nose2x, says, like, hey, I have rendering logic for this thing. Do you want me to apply it? And then it just substitutes out your link for a fully interactive 3D rendering of the thing. And then that way your client, like you were saying, could focus on the social aspect, the commenting and the kind of context, the framing of the main content. But then some third party, some external source could actually like enrich that content. There was a lot of talk about micro apps a couple of years ago.
Exactly. Maybe that where I want to go.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm already designing for it. Like,
oh yeah, awesome.
Because that's what I need. Like, I'm at the same time designing for Zap Store and for group chats. Of course, a group chat is not gonna like make app releases a priority that's something we should really render for the like 0.001% of chat groups that are excited about apps. But okay, yeah, on Noster, different story. Early adopters are excited about that, but like, so these kind of content types, a chat app will not make it their priority to do that. And so you can have a link to the event and have a short description, but ideally in my dream world also, you have some kind of widget made by probably the app, by Zap Store in this case. And you can just automatically, when you release an app with Zap Store, it creates this widget for clients, for apps that don't know how to show app releases. And so then when it pops up in Coracle, Nostrudel, or whatever chat app, it can show this interactive PDF-like preview of it, so it can say, this is app, this is TikTok, it has description, it has a download button. It can, in my mind, this kind of hypernodes or widgets, they only talk to the Nostr network, so they can go and fetch stuff like the other profiles in your network that have zapped this app or whatever information they can go and get. In my mind, ideally, they do not talk to the web with API calls and things like this because of attack surface, and also because I want to limit this to promote creativity with this. And so, yeah, ideally you have something like that bridging the gray zone in between your chat app and this super specialized app for releasing your app or for the 3D models. So in that case, yeah, Figma would have some kind of widget to showcase 3D app designs, and SketchUp or something like this would have some kind of widget to showcase a 3D model of a house you made, and you want to send it in a chat group, and you have something to interact with in a very simple way. And I like having that gray zone. We're not there yet with the exact details on hypernodes and widgets and things like this, because of people worrying about the attack surface and because of Android and iPhone developers having to have some kind of web view and all of that stuff. But the incentive is there so much for something like this to be there. So yeah, I'm design ready, spec ready. We will see.
Yeah, that's a tricky problem, because you have, like you were saying, the web views, and then constant security policy would make it hard to load scripts from other things. And then, you know, if you're bringing in a particular language, like what Yakihon has done with their widgets, then the clients all need to have the complexity of having an interpreter for whatever that markup language is, which is either going to be highly limited or very complex, because you're basically building a web browser inside a web browser at that point.
And centralizing, because then you're starting a new protocol and things like that. There's problems with that. Why it will probably be hard to HTML in some way. But yeah, anyway, I get very much what you mean with the necessity and the incentive for that gray zone to be there, because it's super useful. And even then, like, let's say it's something like HTML and the images in it and videos and all of that stuff are something like Blossom files and hashes all the way down. Then if you have a widget like this and you go to the details section, or you click on a remix button on something like this, you could very easily imagine the whole insane fun that you can start having with that. Because me, I mostly want to use them also for stories, like Instagram does, so that you can have you can offer a reliable way to creators to show something in a visual way, so they can have a video in the background, put buttons on the things. They can have a little game that pulls in profile pictures from your network. Like, you can do all of this crazy stuff. And then you can go to some kind of remix button and you can just switch out the video and use the exact same animation that this guy made. Or, like, it's a fun, very fun potential world to think about.
It's a killer user experience for whatever application, because it's open, right? You know, people script bots for Slack and stuff like that, or Reddit bots and Twitter bots. Being able to script your own render views for the content types and then distribute those as well. The content addressing of Noster is super cool. Like, you know, Coracle has those custom feeds. And, you know, in the context of this discussion, maybe I've done that wrong, because it's data that the client then has to interpret. And custom feeds are something that can get unlimited. You can have unlimited complexity, which is what kind of Noster script is aiming at actually solving. Maybe a better way to do it would be to have like an interpreter sort of app, that micro app that gets injected into your page and then can deal with something up with unlimited complexity. But then of course there's the bandwidth requirements. So I don't know. I'm not going to dismiss my own design yet. So this sort of permeability of different applications and this gray zone, as you call it, that's one thing, and that's on kind of the content type level. Where do you see the way that I usually ask this question is, like, what is the value proposition of Noster as it comes to community groups? And of course that's a huge question, because there's a million different kinds of groups. The value proposition of Noster for, like, Reddit subreddit type groups, I think, is really obvious. Being able to fork those and dismiss kind of your moderators and have a different set of moderators and stuff like that seems really, really powerful. But those are like public read, public write. There's not a lot of, there's no write protection, there's no read protection involved with those. how do you see that for more privacy-oriented communities where it's like you don't need everything to be totally private, but you'd kind of like to control who's able to post to the group, what moderation looks like, and all that kind of thing? Because, you know, if you go all the way to the centralized version of that, and this is something that I saw folks talking about on Nostr, Max DeMarco was talking about on Nostr today, where, you know, admins are often content creators that are creating their own community that's centered around them. And those people don't want open moderation. They don't want forkable communities. They want their community to be controlled by them. And so for centralized use cases, centralized solutions are fine. There are fewer benefits that, to using Nostr in a context like that. But then there's the things that are like sort of between those extremes where you have community organizers, but the purpose of the community really doesn't have anything to do with them. They might move, leave the geographical area that defines the community or whatever it might be and hand things off. What benefit do these sort of more closed use cases have with being embedded in a more wider Nostr network, if that makes sense?
Yeah, for me, it makes very much sense. And I try to stay more and more away of looking at big tech for the comparisons, because we have a way broader spectrum to play with, because we have the visitors or the community members having their own keys. We have the possibility of the creators or community admins to have their own relay, and we have a protocol so that they all speak the same language, and we even have that for the whole monetization part also. So coming from that lens, we can satisfy, I think, a wide variety, a whole spectrum of use cases, going from the creator that already has a community and wants to service that community. Then I think a relay-based community is going to be very valuable to this person because he can control it on that level and control the write and read accesses. And it can be him that only publishes, or him and some of his friends, or he charges an insane fee or a small fee, or all of that space. I like that that's open and that they can basically choose. And the easiest way to do that for me seems to be just by making them have a relay. Then you can also have communities that just cater to a certain kind of interest or goal that people have. And they, since it's not centered around them, they need to be able to be switched out for other admins and things like this. And even there, the relay seems to be a pretty good and simple fit as a basic building block of Nostr. And there, I think what's the most exciting and what was never possible before is that it can be about more than just their community, because the communities are interoperable by default. If you have a relay that really specializes in posting things about Jesus, and if you have another relay that really specializes in space travel, ancient civilizations, and things like this, and if you write an article in the overlap between these two communities because you think Jesus was a space traveler or something like this, you can publish that article in both of these communities, and it can be the same event, and depending on the client, it can be these two groups coming together in the reply section. And if you yourself want to spin up a new community that has as the niche interest Jesus is space traveling or some whatever crazy niche like this, you can basically start bootstrapping it in that way, because you can then publish that article to the Jesus relay community, to the space traveling relay community, and to your own community that you're trying to bootstrap. So if you're not a big creator yet, you have this way of basically, yeah, piggybacking a bit on the on the other communities, depending if they allow it. Like, you can have this whole, yeah, interesting zone to organically grow or let die certain communities. And yeah, my mind is going a lot there and how to design for that, because Noster is set up like that by default. And so, yeah, I stay a bit away from the YouTuber needs a closed community to monetize in the way that he's always been monetizing. And I'm a bit more enthusiastic about, what if Max DeMarco doesn't want to just broadcast his video about sleeping on the floor to his community, but he can simultaneously publish it to the floor sleepers community as well. He maybe pays a fee to publish it there, and he can, in the tags of that event, specify, I target these communities, and if they accept it, we can kind of see it as an event part of those communities. And basically, we can already do that. So it's already slowly going in that direction anyway. And I think that's very exciting, because the floor sleepers can discover Max DeMarco and join his community or start following his community for more stuff like this. And likewise, the Max DeMarco fans, they can get into floor sleeping and have a whole community to interact with, besides just the maybe five people that are interested in that in Max DeMarco's network. And yeah, I'm going to start rambling here and let you take over. But that's a bit where my mind is going. A lot.
Yeah, well, all of that stuff makes me really excited, actually. And it's interesting, the trade-off between including the community's identifier in the tags and not. So, you know, currently Coracle has a repost function that allows you to repost between NIP72 communities. And even to do, I think it allows you to do encrypted reposts to NIP87 communities. And so when those nodes show up in your timeline, it'll show you like reposted from this, you know, the sleeping on the floor community. So it kind of already exists, but you know, it's tied to the legacy NIP72 communities, which has, I think it could be sort of salvaged, but there are some problems with NIP72 having to do with group administration and moderation that are not easily solved. So moving forward is great. But, you know, if that content needs to be shared by someone else to a new group, you can't modify the tags. So no matter where it pops up, it'll always say reposted from the original group ID. That could be okay. So like the alternative would be to not put any tags that are special on the event itself and only post it to a particular location, right? So, you know, because it came from the floor sleepers relay and was replicated to Max DeMarco's personal community relay, it exists in both of those communities. You don't have visibility on the event itself to know that it exists on the other ones. That seems like the main downside. But that way, people can replicate content across the network. And, you know, I always talk about decommodification of relays. And this is basically what I mean, where you have a relay that is focused on certain content. And so people, that relay has a reputation. Like I was saying earlier about that, my previous protocol that I was working on, even if it's not in the protocol, relays do have reputation and people use particular relays for particular reasons. Right now it's mostly like performance. But if there were more of an emphasis on these relay based communities, then, you know, you would go to Max DeMarco's relay to find out interesting stuff about whatever topics he's working on. So like, I don't know, how do you resolve that trade-off between having the community targeted on the event? Maybe you could add like another kind of event that says specifically like, this event over here was reposted here from this location. But I mean, getting actual support for that seems unlikely because it's not really an atomic event.
As far as I know, like this kind of tag, you can you can switch them out, right? They're replaceable in some way. Because I asked this question specifically, if you can change the tags later. So if I publish in Floor Sleepers and in three other communities, because they overlap my goal with my publication. But later, if Floor Sleepers becomes Floor Sleepers with Prostitutes, and I'm like, I don't want to have anything to do with that, and I don't want to have it specified that my publication was targeted there, I can change that and switch it out for another community. Like, I kind of like the fact of having this targeting that you can manage as a creator over time also, because it also makes it so that communities can have certain guidelines. Like, for example, if I want to publish in the Floor Sleepers community and I also want to publish in the Damus Relay community, and the Damus Relay is free, and so then in the reply section suddenly like 1 million people are also invited and it's spam all over the place, you know, Floor Sleepers might not be okay with that. So I like the idea of the communities kind of playing in the market a bit like this, with the rules that they have, or the what they accept and what they don't accept. And I like that you don't have to repost, and that there doesn't have to be one king community where it all originates from. Because what will be the most important community part of a publication will depend on the user reading it. If I am part of Max DeMarco's group, that will be the top community for me. And that will also be probably the way that I compartmentalize my time and attention. And then it gets back to a bit to the whole design aspect of all of this. Me, I see a design where it's not just you scrolling an endless feed of things posted in certain communities, but more I choose to dive into this community right now kind of experience, which overlaps way more with a chat UI where you have the different groups. And so then I can go to the Max DeMarco community, or go specifically to the Space Travels community, or to the Jesus community, or to the Noster Nips community, because I choose to spend time on that right now and see publications that have to do with that interest or goal or whatever. If they happen then to overlap with other communities, that's great. And that's the organic discovery aspect that I like about all of this.
Yeah, the idea that you can that you can discover content across communities is one thing, and then but then there's the flip side of that, which is where if you're in community A and you find a piece of content and it shows all the comments from community A under that, but you have a little toggle that says like, this content was also found in community B, do you want to view those comments too? And then you can swap out the entire comment section for the other community, and so you can have an entire community posting into another community via this anchor that has already been reposted. And this is similar to, you know, it's basically distributed moderation, right? Because moderation on Noster should be something that the user chooses rather than the host chooses, although there are probably use cases for that too. You know, because, and like Web of Trust is a way to do this too. You can say, I only want to see comments from people I follow or people in my network, or maybe I only want to see comments from people that Jack follows. And so there's an unlimited number of comment sections that can exist based on mixing and matching webs of trust, communities, whatever other context you might be able to come up with.
Yep. Yeah. And I think the most simple is just, like, at least the way I'm designing it, is look at the communities that it was targeted at, and just pull the comment events from there. That's also the lazy way, because then you only have to connect to those relays and basta, you're done with it. You display those. I think that's the most interesting, because you can see them interact. Depending if they put a price tag on these replies and things like this, you might want to only reply to one specific community and not to the more expensive one or things like this. Like, but all of these things I already have designs for, and I think they're very much acceptable. And so the basic use case I see is the reply section where these groups, communities come together, and then maybe at the end or some kind of toggle is like, do you want to see what other people on completely other places, relays, are commenting on this? Because, of course, other relays can choose to store certain events also on their relay, even if it's not targeted there, whether it's for backup or for curating for certain material or for whatever use case they have.
Community discovery.
That's the permissionless part. But yeah, me, I'm in love with the creators can target an audience and they can target multiple audiences. And that's for me the very first time that we can ever do that, because other big tech platforms, they don't have a language between them, and they especially do not have a monetization language between them. And we can.
That's huge. That's huge. That's a different approach. That's a different perspective than I've had on this before. Because I normally think in terms of what the user is looking for. And so they opt into all these different places and pull from a multiplicity. But you can also push to a multiplicity of locations. And like, of course, you know, Blaster is kind of the main broadcast implementation that we have so far. But it's not judicious, right? It's just spam, because 99% of those locations, those relays, probably don't care about whatever event you're pushing. Whereas if you have more write access controls for relays, and relays actually have some kind of value proposition in distinction to other relays as far as who reads from it or whatever, you know, maybe profit sharing or something like that, then you can actually choose which relays make sense and then opt into those in a more like relationally based sort of way. Of course, exactly. Like the protocol needs to have you know, ways to join relays and pay for things. And I think those are starting to come out. But
yeah, and that's where I still need two specifications to help with that, so that relays can... Like, I need a specification for a community that wants to set up a community, that they can browse the services that let them do that, that let them spin up a relay and maybe even a Blossom Media server with it. So I need a way to fetch all of these services that can do that with the information, their business models, pricing schemes, whatever. I don't know if that can be poured into some kind of general spec or their, it goes a bit all over the place, their business models. I don't know that yet, but that would be ideal, that I can say, like, create a new community, and it's basically, here's the list of services that can do that for you. And me, I can show the all-in-one solutions, or you want to do it relay-specific, Blossom-specific, whatever. That's something I need. And then there's also the, let's say there is the Floor Sleepers and the Space Travelers communities. How can they display their terms of service, basically, their pricing, their guidelines, and maybe even what they're using as their hosting solution. Like, those would be interesting to have in some kind of specification so that the user can visit the community and see what the deal is.
Yeah, I think NIP66 and NIP11 go part of the way towards doing a lot of that stuff. NIP66 makes NIP11 documents queryable, basically. But there's a lot, like you're saying, there's a lot of complexity and flexibility that needs to be added for that metadata, both in terms of like human readable stuff and machine readable stuff. Yep. So, but I think we can get there. I think like Vitor has some relay tags I've heard of. I don't know much about it, but like relay categories.
So this type
of relay. So just like abstractions over what these use cases might be, and of course like categories can become too rigid, but that might be a good place to start. I'm going to ask the loaded question now. So NIP29 versus relay based groups. What's the difference in your mind? What are the trade offs, and which are you kind of targeting?
Yeah, for me that's a bit difficult to answer since I'm not a pro developer or something like this. So, I mean, I can read JSON and I can try to understand the NIP proposals. And so me, I assumed NIP29 was relay-based communities. And I tried to then understand it. And there's many things I don't understand, and there's many complexities that I from a complete naive Neil angle, don't really get why they're there, because I already see things like Ditto pop up and just people already setting up relays with cloud fodder on relay tools and having some kind of read and write access on that, that involves pricing, that involves all of the things that I see, which is the most simple thing. And that's just, you have a relay and the relay has rules for read and write access. And that's the community. And that's it. Ideally, this relay has some kind of pub key, which it can sign stuff with and do many other things with. But if not, it's basically that. It's a place to do whatever with. And for community admins, it's really handy to just curate all of their events around whatever interest, like floor sleeping or space travel. There, set a price for publishing a chat message or for a post, or maybe even try subscription if they want. I don't see why it has to be more complicated than that. And I think what I might be missing is some kind of huge cost or energy or time difference between spinning up your own relay or spinning up a community on a relay that hosts many communities. Like, that's where I think I might be misunderstanding something, that there's some kind of convenience in doing NIP29 and having this kind of random identifier on a relay that has many random identifiers that all mean a certain group. But I like the simple. I like seeing it already work with just relays really fast, and I can pull all of the messages from a relay and it works. And then I try NIP29 clients and I post messages. They're never there. Everything is buggy. That's my naive angle. And that's why I'm like, I like to keep it simple. I think I like to just do more of what organically is already starting to happen anyway, and make that interoperable and do what has never done before.
Awesome. I'm really glad to hear you say that. Pablo's going to hate me, but I'm totally with you. Like, relays are a great basic primitive, and there's no reason that a relay should be any more expensive than a database record. Spinning up a community within a relay, because relays can be virtual. All a relay is a URL. So you could have multiple relays that are backed by a single instance. It could be the same exact architecture with just a different patina on it. So yeah, like having relays that you address rather than groups that need a specific type of relay in order to be administered, I think makes plenty of sense too. And then it just goes back to kind of that access control kind of thing where you need to say, like, am I allowed to join this relay? So I can tell the user they have to click join first, and kind of doing all the things to smooth out the UI implications of that. But yeah, like it's already being done. Ditto is a really good example because Alex innovated that NIP05 identifier thing. So when you go to a particular Ditto instance, it privileges posts on a particular timeline view that are made by people with a matching NIP05 identifier on their profile. So you can belong to a particular community, and you can only belong to one, but you can still post across the entire network. And it's like, it's a great evolution from Mastodon. What I'm working on is a little bit more like just straightforward what you're talking about. And I think the difference between relay-based groups and NIP29, you were saying, like, forget everything you know about social media and legacy solutions, but I don't have quite the galaxy designer brain that you do. So I have to think in those terms still. But I'm trying to build like a Discord thing. And Discord is really interesting because they have that add server button. And on Discord, you don't actually add servers. It's actually just all hosted on their infrastructure. But on Nostr, we can add a server. And so you have your client that a user sets up, and then they have multiple servers that they join. And they're just regular relays, or maybe they have a little bit of authentication stuff to it. Whereas NIP29, I think, is more focused on like a Telegram replacement where you join a server and you get a whole bunch of groups that you can opt into individually. And so they're very similar, but they're different enough that they almost require different approaches. I think you could do the NIP29 thing with regular relays too, like the telegram metaphor with regular relays. But I tried to build on NIP29 for a while, and I've finally decided that I want to do something totally different, and that's just use relays as they basically are.
Yeah, and I tend to agree, because you can also bootstrap it way faster, because you can just open up Nostrudel and only pull from that relay, or only pull from a, like, you can already just test it in any client then. Yeah, it seems simpler. I think you can do the Telegram use case completely like this. And NIP29 also introduces all of these things straight copied out of the Telegram playbook. Yeah, like, you have to join it. But I don't want to join it if I just want to read it. I just want to be able to more... Yeah, it's more like a follow that I want to do until I actually start doing something that might have a cost to that community. I don't want to do anything more than add it to my home screen. So the whole join request thing, or yeah, being invited, and like, I don't know. I think that's, again, copying big tech for no particular reason, unless I'm wrong, of course. But I like, because in my story, I, for example, open a post, an article that someone made about Jesus and space travel. And I'm following the Jesus community, and I see, oh, this is also posted in the space travel community. I click on that. I just want to open it and see what's happening there. I don't want to join it or anything like this. I might want to, it's more like, yeah, follow or add it to my home screen. That kind of action is what I imagine, ideally, I can do. Just like I can do the exact same with the people in that community. And yeah, that's what I would like to do. And then if I want to publish something also in the space travelers community, and they have a member subscription, or they just charge cash 21 sets to publish an article there, then next time I publish an article myself, I publish it in the Jesus and in the space traveler, I pay the price and I'm fine. And I know I'm also targeting that audience. And it's great, because I want to target that audience. And it just, I don't know. In my mind, it just works like that. I don't know what I'm missing.
How important are write controls in your mind? Because, like, you know, if all the relays are open, then people are just going to abuse the relay based groups in the same way that they abuse hashtags, you know, with like 30 hashtags on it. How do you see that kind of playing out?
First is the analogy that I start making more and more, that if I start a bar, I can start the bar by offering free beer, or I can start the bar by catering to a specific niche, and even put extra money in having a super fancy staircase and things like this. Like, but a certain audience might care to go on a date in that bar and to directly pay for it. And that will be the kind of business model where you might do a crowdfunding to start that bar or whatever. And then the free beer bar kind of bootstrapping your business is like getting lots of folks to come to hopefully that some stick around. I don't like that model. I prefer to go the going for a niche. Yeah. So that's a bit the general analogy that I see. I don't like morally what the free beer analogy attracts as its users. I would never target my article about Jesus and space travelers to a completely free relay. Like, I would just never do that. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't attract it. Like, I would immediately not get accepted anymore in the Jesus community. And so, yeah, I'm not fond of that. That's not, again, that's my farmer brain speaking. That's not how we started our farm neither. So I like the other approach better, and especially if it comes to more trust-involving situations. Like, for example, for ZapStore, you don't want to just offer anyone to start publishing app releases on the ZapStore relay. They can set up their own Wild West relay or whatever crazy relay, and they can also see that from within the app. their choice. But on the relay that caters for really good and signed FOSS apps, you're either going to just whitelist bit by bit the actual developers that can sign stuff there, or you charge a price and you set some kind of guidelines. Because, of course, you cannot expect all developers to already be on Nostr. And, like, you can play with that space. Me, personally, I would set a price, but that's just me. And there's a whole design space possible. Yeah, sorry, that was a bit of a long ramble, but...
No, that's great. That it kind of covers that defederation use case that Mastodon has, where one instance will block another instance because they don't want their content showing up on their instance. And that's like, that's perfectly fine, except that it strands the users on that instance. Whereas on Nostr, not only do users have their own pub keys, but in this sort of multi-community setup, a relay can block any content that's also been posted to another relay because they don't want to advertise that relay's commenters and community because of differences. But that content is still free to be viewed either on the original community or on anything else that is posted to, or on free relays or global, you know, global views of multiple relays or whatever it might be. So you can have defederation without all the negative effects there. I love having Mastodon in the background, because I think it was a really good attempt 10 years ago at this problem. But Nostr so cleanly solves a lot of the issues that have become real pain points with Mastodon. Another question I have for you is private communities. So, and by private, you know, everyone always has to qualify. Like, I don't mean activists who are going to get arrested if someone finds out about what they said. I do not mean that. Activists should use really good encryption and keep groups very small to 2 members or fewer if you really want privacy. So, like, you know, the example I am always thinking of is my church community. So they have opinions that they don't want the entire world to know about. They might have opinions that they don't want everyone in the town that they live in to know. But, like, if something leaks, or if the whole database leaks even, it's not that big of a deal, as long as it's not like, well, I mean, it could even show up in a news article or something, and that would be a scandal. But that's, you deal with that on the social level, right? Of like, we were eavesdropping on this person, and in order to publish that data, you have to say, I was being sneaky. And so perfect privacy is not that big a deal, but relative privacy is useful to make people comfortable enough to have the conversations in semi-private that they want to have. So a lot of the examples you've been giving have to do with public read, private write. So authentication is based on who is allowed to post to this group rather than who is allowed to read from this group. Do you see relay-based groups accommodating those well, or are there problems either from like a design standpoint or something else that occur to you about that?
So far, again, as the naive person speaking here, I don't see any big problem in the same setup catering to the private groups instead of the public communities. The public communities, they just have that organic discovery built in, whereas when you go to private groups, you also cut off the read access to anyone but a whitelisted set of profiles. And there you have a slightly different user experience, because you do have to get invited or have some kind of link to that place that others might not even know of. And then you have to be whitelisted in some way. But then again, a relay is a pretty great place to start for those kind of communities, because whatever rules they might set for being discoverable as a private space, for letting you in there, like you for your church community, I don't know how you would do it, like manually check who applied, or they have to like do something, like whatever, they have to know the name of the pastor or something like this. You can set any limit to that on the relay level, and then just again you have the relay as the main hosting solution of the events of that community, maybe even with a media server with it. And I think centralization there also, again, is really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the invite code stuff, I think, is an important dimension of this. I've had a nip out since probably March for NIP72 communities and 87 communities, but it's on the relay level where when you join a relay, you can send along an access code. It's just a different event kind. And that invite code could be the name of the pastor, or it could be, you know, TGFN24, or it could be like, you know, a pre-image of a lightning invoice that you've paid. It could be a CAPTCHA proof, anything like that.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Could be sent back and forth. Cool. So we're coming up on time here. I did want to ask, is there anyone out there who is building the things that you've been mocking out?
Not really, because they're building NIP29 stuff. So it kind of matches with what I'm designing. Like basically what I spent most of my time on right now is gathering everything a bit from all of the projects I've been involved in and putting it in one design system that is completely tailored to what I'm talking about here. And that serves as a really nice basis for me, because then if anyone is asking, like, how should I design a chat on Noster, then I, in that system anyway, I have how a chat bubble should look like and how you add a reply with a custom emoji, how you bookmark, whatever. Like, all of that stuff is in there. But then I'm also taking on that challenge of what is new in Noster, the interoperability of those communities. And so I'm working on all of that. And bringing that all together is motivating me to just start building myself at some point. So I'm looking into how to code it more and more, or how to find people to collaborate with on that. So what stack to use, all of that stuff. But as far as I know, the people leaning most toward this are hacking their way into it either from the relay side and using the current kind one clients, but just only pulling from one relay, or doing things like this, or just straight up going to pages of relays and looking at the messages there. Like, people are already trying to do exactly what I'm talking about with the mess and the collage of apps that we currently have. So they're already doing that without the full experience in one app. That's why I'm excited about it. And that's why I will get this built if nobody else does it.
Cool. Fantastic. Well, I do have to say, I love your designs. They look really, you know, they spark joy, which I think is maybe not the most important part of a design. The most important part is that industrial design sort of set of affordances and that kind of thing. But sparking joy is kind of important too. So I have to say, I do love your designs. Is there anything else that you want to leave the listeners with before we sign off here?
Not really. I think I've rambled on about many things I'm excited about. So, just like, if they're excited about things like this, feel free to reach out. Like, again, I'm more or less design ready.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on, Neil. I really appreciate it. It was a great conversation.
Yeah, likewise.